maybe play the third. XM's Artist Confidential.
Artist.
Master. Virtuoso. Proficient at his or her craft.
Confidential.
Restricted for your ears only.
XM's Artist Confidential.
Access to artists you will only find on XM.
Artist Confidential.
Smart radio.
Intelligent interaction.
Timeless artists share their craft uncensored. No rules. And before a live audience in XM's Performance Theater.
This is Artist Confidential.
Confidential.
From XM's Department of Original Programming.
30 years ago, Eddie Money had his first string of hits, and they just kept coming.
I've got two tickets to paradise, so baby, hold on to me, give a shake. I think I'm in love. I wanna go back and do it all. Take me home tonight. If I could walk on one or two, gonna make love by the night. Gonna find peace in our time.
One, two, three.
Eddie covers a collection of his favorite tunes from the 60s on his latest album, Wanna Go Back.
Good love, good love, all I need is love on the expressway to your heart, the expressway.
Artist Confidential.
To your heart.
This is Artist Confidential number 62 with Eddie Money, an XM exclusive music presentation. Now, from XM's Performance Theater, before a live studio audience, here's Artist Confidential host, Lou Brutus.
Our guest today is living proof that nice guys do not finish last. His career spans 4 decades of radio hits, killer live performances, and charitable work that Mother Teresa herself would have been proud of. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Money Man, Eddie Money.
So much, it's great to be here. My good buddy Lou, we go way back. I love Washington, D.C., having a great time here. This is the Eddie Money Band. We've got Lee on bass guitar, Lee Beverly, great bass player from Nashville, Tennessee. Got my buddy there originally with Edgar Winter Band with Greta Appel. He's on drums with Sir Chris Frazier. Got my little girl, Jessie Money. She's doing a lot of harmonies and singing some new songs with me. My daughter, Jessie, everybody. Originally with the Elvin Bishop Band, the producer of my new record, Wanna Go Back, a big hand please for Randy Forrester on the keyboards. One of the best guitar players in the country, you did not know, not he's been with me for 20 years, the incredible Tommy Gervin on lead guitar. You know what I got in my pocket?
Two tickets
to paradise. Especially for everybody out there today, let me hear you, come on. Something that all of us have always wanted everybody. Come on. I said I'm taking everybody. How you doing, Lou?
Great to see you again. How the hell you been?
Great to be back here. Huh? Me and Lou, we go way back, huh? We went to different high schools together.
You know, you've been doing this for a number of years. As you said, you and I go back a long ways. Why is it that you are still here while so many other people have had their careers go by the wayside?
I tell you, the truth is you got to write songs about everyday situations. Who doesn't want to take somebody home tonight? Who doesn't think they're in love? And who doesn't want 2 tickets to paradise? So, baby, hold on to me because I want to go back and do it all over again. No, we write songs about everyday situations. And I just tell you, you know, I've had great producers like Bruce Botnick, who did The Doors. And, of course, Tom Dowd, who did everybody from Layla to Rod Stewart to Eric Clapton. I've been surrounded by some really great people. When Sony Music used to be Columbia Records, of course, my manager, Bill Graham, who unfortunately died in a helicopter accident, not unlike Stevie Ray Vaughan. A lot of people come and go. The good Lord's been very good to me. I'm still around. I got a great rock and roll band. We got a new record out called Want to Go Back, which is songs from the 60s, which was songs that I really cut my teeth in. Songs like Hold On, I'm Coming. Hold On, I'm and Land of a Thousand Dances. I said a na-na. It's just really great songs. We're having a lot of fun with the success of the record. And, you know, I got 5 kids, so I'd do anything to get out of the house. I'm always on the road. And I'm lucky to have my daughter here. And it's just, we're having a lot of fun.
Is Jesse the oldest of the kids?
No, actually, I have an older son of mine that's in college. Who's driving a car? Wait, I thought I could write him off, but now I can't write him off until he's 22 because he's in college. What he's doing in college, we don't know. We got a hand, you know. I don't think he's going to be the next president of the United States, but he might get a job somewhere.
Now, when did
she's the second oldest, Jessica.
I was going to say, when did the kids start to figure out, and Jesse, you might want to chime in on this, when did they all figure out dad isn't a plumber? Dad doesn't have a regular job.
Well, I think we knew from the very beginning. I mean, ever since I was really little, I've been on stage singing the Be My Little Baby part. Like, my whole family, they're very musically artistic, and everyone's always playing an instrument in the house. I mean, there's not a quiet moment in my house, I'll tell you that. But my brothers play piano and bass and drums. It's just, I think we just grew up with music, so it's normal for us.
My wife says to me, stop picking on the kids. What are you, Joe Jackson? Sing, sing.
He really is Joe Jackson.
But there's no place to park the car anymore because we actually turned the garage into a recording studio for the kids.
That's really neat.
You know, it's always great, and so many artists come out of musical households. Eddie, there was a great quote I read from you talking about your dad, I believe, saying, Dad kept me away from the crap, musical crap.
Well, I got to check. My father was a cop when I was growing up. I think that when Goldwater lost the election, he stayed in bed for 2 weeks. You know, he was such a devout conservative and stuff like that. But, you know, he wanted me to be a cop, but my hair was getting really good in the back. And so I quit the police department. I couldn't be a cop. I couldn't see myself in uniform for 20 years. So I moved out to California, and we did a show called Sounds of the Cities, which was an amateur night for the incredible promoter, Bill Graham. And we won the thing, and next thing I know, I was on Saturday Night Live and doing the Midnight Special, and, you know, it was a really boost for my career, and, you know, things really went well in my direction. But then again, even when I got my record deal, I was, you know, I was taking saxophone lessons in college and learning a lot about blues scales and things like that. I really, you know, I think that if you're really interested in becoming a musician, you should learn as much about your craft as possible.
You've mentioned Bill Graham a couple of times, just one of the giants of this industry in the greatest of ways. If you could tell people a couple of maybe nice stories about him.
Bill Graham was a wonderful man because he always gave back to the community. When they had that horrible earthquake in San Francisco, he had things that went out for helping the school systems out, and all the money was going into some politicians' pockets. He stopped all that. He put on the US Festival, which was 650,000 people with the police and the cars. It was really a great, he was a great guy to have around. And, you know, it was like, you know, business has got to be business. I mean, when you think about Bill Graham, he was a Jewish kid that actually walked out of Poland with 500 kids and 250 of them died on the way to Paris from starvation and stuff like that. I met his sister Esther, who actually had the tattoos of the number on her arm from Auschwitz. Well, here's a man that's been through a lot of tragic moments in his life, but he became very, being America being the greatest country in the world, he came here as an immigrant. He worked his way up. Eventually, he was like booking the Beatles and managing the Stones. And he was a great man. He was a sweetheart of a guy. He really was.
Now, a lot of people, given the talent you had and given the fact they wanted to take their shot at the music industry, would have gone to New York. You left to New York.
Right.
And went to the West Coast. What was the thinking there?
Well, I left the New York to go to the West Coast because I quit the police department. And if anybody's got a mother that's from New York, you know, it's like the body grip that doesn't let go. So I had to move all the way. I had to move on to the other side of the country. And plus, she may be, you know, there's nothing like worse than the guilt that you have from your mother about quitting the police department. What are you doing out there? Your brother's in Vietnam, blah, 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 blah. It was a long, hard road there. But then, you know, I went back and I went to UC Berkeley and they were happy because I was getting a degree majoring business and minoring in music, which was completely backwards. I didn't get that right. But to make a long story short, I got an education and came around. And then when they saw me doing Saturday Night Live and I had a record deal and selling millions of records, I guess they decided that, you know, rock and roll wasn't all that bad. But my father would always walk the door and stalk and say, "Those kids better stop calling me Mr. Money. My name is Mr. Mahoney."
Well, you feel like diving into another tune?
Sure. We'd like to do a song that would... What would we got second here?
I can't. Baby, Hold On to Me.
Let's do Baby, Hold On, my big hit from 1970. Guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hold on to me. Tired of feeling. Everybody knows this. Come on now. Baby, hold on to me. Whatever will be, I said. You might want a better life. Is it true you think these things are left? Well, think about it, baby. I'm gonna take you to the top. So, baby, hold on to me.
Come on.
Whatever will be. The future is ours to see.
Everybody, what the Beatles say?
Money can't buy you love. So baby, hold on to me. Whatever will be. The future is ours to see. When you hold on to me,
I said on. Hold on. I said on. Hold on to me, tighter. I'm never gonna leave you now. Can't you please believe me? Never gonna let you go, so hold on to me, tighter.
Baby, hold on to me. What? future is ours to see. When you hold on to me, hold on.
Buy a nickel for every time I sang that song, I'll be a rich man.
You know, you've opened with two hugely successful songs. And from here, I would like to maybe get some stuff from the new album where you go back and revisit
that'd be a lot of fun, yeah.
Stuff that you grew up on. But let's tie the two together. What is it that makes a song timeless? Why have those songs been successful for so many decades and people are still singing them? They still mean so much.
Well, they're very melodic. You know, being that I grew up in New York City, you know, my parents would always go to the Broadway shows, whether it be Damn Yankees or Carousel or, you know, any of the, they would bring home the classics and we'd put on the turntable and listen to all these Broadway shows. And I guess I wrote songs. When I wrote songs, they were always very melodic. I mean, I can remember Doris Day trying to sue me for Baby Hold On to Me because she thought it was Que Sera Sera. And I said, who's Doris Day? But when you think about it, it's like, Baby, hold on to me. The future's a Que Sera Sera. Well, she's got a valid point. But I never saw the movie. So, but it's just, sometimes you get caught in traps where you don't even know what you're doing. It's like, you know, the chiffon sued George Harrison for My Sweet Lord,
yeah,
for One Fine Day. You know, what goes around comes around. It's the same four or five chords. If you get stuck in a rut, steal from somebody that had a hit.
We have a first question from out of the audience.
Now, you mentioned earlier that some of the songs on your new CD are Baby, Hold On, I'm Coming, and Land of a Thousand Dances, which I'm big fans of Wilson Pickett and
right,
Sam and
sure.
Dave.
Yeah.
So was R&B a big influence early in your career? Or?
Oh, yeah. When I grew up, I used to do songs like Patti LaBelle and the Blue Bloods, who is now Patti LaBelle. She did a song called You Never Walk Alone, which was a showstopper. We used to do James Brown medley. We used to do Please Please and Oh Baby Don't You Weep. I did a lot of Otis Redding. I did a lot of Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. I did a lot of, You Don't Need Me and Fill Me Up Buttercup, which was a song by the Foundations out of England. It's a white group with a black singer.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so it was. We did a lot of stuff that I was influenced by. You know, when I redid this record, the Want to Go Back record, it's almost like taking a set list off my drum riser in 1967, which is amazing. And one of the biggest thrills of putting this record together is going back to the original Grapes of Wrath. All of them still alive. The bass player unfortunately died in Vietnam. But going back and giving a copy to the guys that were on the record, they're going, wow, we couldn't believe it. And it was a lot of fun making the record. Great, Chris, and thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, man.
Now tell me, Grapes of Wrath was your band back then. Who were the guys in the band? What kind of gigs were you playing? Where were you playing? How old are you? Tell me everything about those days.
Well, we used to play. We played a place called Zoli's and Ryan's, which was very close to Hofstra College. So I guess I had to say I started playing the college circuit back in 1965, 1966, a long, long time ago. The original Grapes of Wrath, the bass player now is an English teacher. He lives in Richmond, California. He doesn't play anymore. My lead guitar player is now, he works at night for a cab company, making sure all the cabs get in and out. The drummer is into karate right now, and he's living in Florida. The guys, you know, I'm the only one that actually became, that really pursued it. I was a guy, they never thought I was going to make it, but everybody in the band got married and had kids and got real miserable, and I stayed single and still kept making the music. So I guess the process of elimination, I wound up getting the deal.
What were the gigs like? Were these all college crowds? Or were these the kind of places that said,
well,
it
we
must
used to
be
do the battle
songs?
Of the bands, but in order to get the senior prom, when I went to high school, you'd have to do three battle of the bands, and whoever got to win the last battle of the band got paid and got to play the prom. Otherwise, they'd be by the wayside. But it was very competitive growing up. I mean, I used to do shows against Billy Joel when he was with the Hassles. I was in a group called the Grapes of Wrath, and we both lost to a group called the Rich Kids out of Long Island. So we go way back, and I've been playing music since, since before. I was in a rock band, if you can believe it, before the Beatles, doing Chuck Berry and stuff like that.
Well, would you like to dip into a little something from the CD?
Well, I'd like to do something, actually. My connection to, I think the movie Ray was a really fantastic movie because a lot of young people didn't realize how influential Ray Charles was. And my producer's name was Tom Dowd, who was a great, great man who produced a couple of my records. And he worked with Ray Charles an awful lot. And we decided to do You Don't Know Me because Ray Charles was just really great to see young people get turned on to this guy. And this guy, he went through so much as a kid, being blind and everything else like that, then getting hooked on drugs and everything else and coming off that. The guy had a very colorful career, but he had a lot of tough moments in his life. And I think that comes out. I think he's a great and amazing blues singer. And all that pain and heartache came out in his voice. And it was just amazing to listen to.
Let's check it out.
So much. It's tough having a song on the charts because, you know, right now you're going for AC, which is adult contemporary radio, and it's very, you got people like Beyonce, Christina Aguilera, you got Lionel Richie out with a new cut, you got the new group called Gray, I don't know what the hell they are, but there's a lot of group out there fighting for position
in the 30s, trying to get down in the 20s, and every week you're going, you know, my wife says to me, my husband always goes back to church when he's trying to stay on the charts. But to make a long story short, the cut's doing really well. It's getting played on VH1 Classic, and of course XM Radio has always been one of my best friends, and it's really great, you know, to be on the show here to help the record out. And I want to thank you guys for giving me such a great hand here, because I think that Ray Charles was, you know, people say this song fits my voice, and I said, it's about time one of these songs fit my voice. But thank you very much.
Was there any nervousness about taking on any of these songs? Because, again, they are so ingrained in the consciousness of everybody in this country.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. That's a funny question you should ask that, Lou, because when Hall & Oates put out their favorite record from the 60s, there are a couple of Philadelphia boys, and they put out a record of their favorite songs that they were influenced by, but they changed it and twisted it around and made it their own song. Well, I myself thought that, why redo Yesterday unless you're going to try to make it like Paul McCartney or something? You know, you're not going to redo I Want to Hold Your Hand and try to make it sound different like the Beatles. So when I redid this record, I wanted to make it as close to the original recordings as possible. And the only thing that's really different is the intonation of my voice. In other words, instead of Sam and Dave doing it, it's me and my daughter doing it. Or instead of Ray Charles doing it, it's me doing the song. But we tried to keep it as close. Because when you grow up and you do Top 40 back in the 60s and 70s, you try to sound as much like the original artist as possible, you know? And again, I think that's why Christina Aguilera is such a great singer, because that's why my daughter likes it, because she's really, you know, she just wasn't one of the Mouseketeers. The chick's got an incredible voice.
She really is amazing.
And you mentioned radio. You and I grew up on the great New York radio.
We sure did, yeah.
Back in the day when you heard such a great mix of genres
coming
out of the same radio stations.
Oh, yeah, sure. You know, you're going to listen to songs like Shout, you know, Isley Brothers. You make me want it. Just so great. And, of course, the Beatles. And you had Cousin Brucey. You had B. Mitchell Reed. You had Harry. You know, we talked about so many great, great DJs. Cousin Brucey. I mean, these guys, you know, they changed the face of radio forever, you know.
Dan Ingram. Scott
sure.
Muni. God bless them all.
Right, huh?
We have somebody who has a question here.
Yeah, Eddie, speaking of voices that fit the song, how did the collaboration with Ronnie Spector get on to Take Me Home Tonight? And also you had a great one back with Valerie Carter on the Playing for Keeps
album.
Yeah,
that's right. I'll tell you the truth. We originally did the song Take Me Home Tonight. It was written by a couple of guys in England. I didn't write that song. But the reason I did that song is because, being a businessman, it had two choruses. It had Take Me Home Tonight, and then it had the second chorus, which was Be My Little Baby, Ronnie Spector. I was trying to, they were going to use Martha Davis from the Motels to do Ronnie Spector's part, to Be My Little Baby. I said, we got to get, this song is a tribute to Ronnie Spector. We have to find Ronnie Spector. So I got a hold of Ronnie, and I got her on the telephone. I heard a bunch of clinking and clanking. I said, Ronnie, what are you doing? She said she was doing the dishes, because she had a couple of kids, and she got married, and she dropped out of the business. And I said, this is a song that's a real tribute to you, Ronnie. Would you like to come down and do the original Be My Little Babies on it? And she said, well, I don't know about it. But she said she decided to come down and do it. And she got the bug back. You know, she got the bug back. She came out. We made a great video. It was like number one on MTV. She came up and the garage doors went up and the smoke. And there was Ronnie. And she did a great job. And she decided to get back into the business again. So she started to go back and out and doing shows again, which was a real, you know, was a real treat for America to get to hear the great Ronnie Spector. Matter of fact, we just did a show together at the Mohegan Sun up in Connecticut, and Ronnie came out, and she was just amazing.
And how about Valerie Carter?
Valerie Carter was great, but that song, Let's Be Lovers Again, it was an amazing song. I thought Valerie did a better job on it than I did. I was a little 2 sheets to the wind on that session. I could have used the meeting, okay?
You were such a fan of music. Did you start to giggle or laugh? Were you looking at your bandmates when Ronnie walked in to started to do that? You just must have been laughing to yourself.
Well, I'll tell you, just having Ronnie down there was just amazing in itself. I mean, the guys, you know, to us, like Ronnie Spector is really amazing. And like when she came down and did the Mohegan Sun, all the guys in the band said, you know, that she sounded amazing. Now, they only tell me I sound amazing, you know, when they want to raise her, maybe around Christmas time or something. Gee, she sounded great tonight. I'm looking behind. Were they talking to me or what? No, but Ronnie came down and did a great job. And it was great to have my daughter sit on Playing with a Legend, too. I mean, like, Etta James is a sweetheart. We used Etta James' horn section for the Wanna Go Back record. And Etta is just a sweetheart of a gal. And I met Etta a couple of times, and she was gracious to my daughter. Oh, you know, we got to meet. My daughter comes on stage and sings Midnight Rider, which is a song by the Allman Brothers. Well, Greg Allman's really good people, too. And, you know, she got a chance to meet Greg. One thing about the music business, these musicians that have been around as long as I do, you know, like meeting the Rolling Stones, you'd think Mick Jagger would be real stuck up, or Keith Richards. They're just regular people. They're just really, really nice people, you know. You hardly ever run into a bad egg.
Is that one of the common threads? And I mentioned that bringing you out here earlier. You don't find too many jerks who last that long. Is that what it comes down to? You just need to be level-headed?
I would have to say that, you know, I think that if you're going to stay in this business long enough, it's a very small business. And if you can make some enemies, you know, or something else like that, you know, for the longest time. I remember one time we were playing with 38 Special, and I was very gracious to everybody in the band. And I guess one of the chicks got a little east-winded and said I was trying to pick her up while I was happily married. The last thing in the world I was going to do is pick up another guitar player's wife or girlfriend, especially if she's singing on stage with him. So this guy went ballistic on me. But, you know, sometimes being in the wrong place at the wrong time, something can happen. But, you know, I never touched her.
That leads me to...
But most of all, you know, what goes around comes around in this business. And that's why, you know, the people that are the decent people that last a long time, you know, you make sure if you got somebody opening you up, make sure you give them a sound check. You know, do what people do for you. If you're on stage with the Rolling Stones, they're going to give you half an hour for a sound check. They don't have to give you nothing, but they do. And it's like courtesy, what goes around comes around. Hi, honey. What's going on, baby?
Go ahead.
You said that most of your songs, the lyrics are written, you know, basic, life, what's going on. Is there any of your songs that when you're singing them, it's more deeper than just lyrics to you, like that have an extra special meaning to you?
When I wrote Two Tickets to Paradise, I had no money at all. And I had a girlfriend that went to college, and her mother would keep her away from me on weekends to meet doctors and lawyers because I was just a musician. So I really had no money to take her anywhere. To me, Two Tickets to Paradise was taking her on a Greyhound bus up to the Redwoods in Northern California. And we never got to make the trip anyway. So when you think about Two Tickets to Paradise, it could be going to Hawaii, or it could be going to your sister-in-law's house and staying on the couch in the basement. Just getting out of town. That's what it's all about. But yeah, there are songs that hit me hard, like, you know, when I do songs like Baby Hold On, I think of a girl named Jo Baker. She was in a group called Stone Ground that was never really a big group, but they came out of San Francisco in the late 60s and early 70s. And she used to be Elvin Bishop's girlfriend, and we were very, very good friends. But, for example, she could not really put her demons beside her. Unfortunately, she died of a cirrhosis of the liver. She could never stop drinking. And every night when I sing that song, no matter what, and my daughter does the part, it makes me think of my relationship with Joe and how sad it is that she's no longer with us, you know.
Well, you feel like diving into something else?
Sure. What do you guys want to hear? Maybe we could do something like Trinidad. We could do that in a minute. Why don't we do something off the new record,
yeah,
the song?
Ain't No Mountain. Yeah,
Ain't No Mountain High Enough. The reason I made this new record, actually, songs in the 60s, is Jessica was singing with me, and she said, I'd like to do something different. I'd like to do that song by Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. And I just finished reading that book. I don't know if you read it or not, Troubled Man, about Marvin Gaye. Great, great book. And Marvin was always one of my favorite. And Tammy Terrell, who unfortunately died of a brain tumor, which is a very tragic death. She was a great, great vocalist herself. And we decided, I said, you know, let's do the song. And we actually decided to make the new record, Want to Go Back. This was one of the first songs on it. And everybody knows it, so you can help us out. So it was making, we're a little hoarse. I did 5 shows in a row. So we're going to do Ain't No Mountain High Enough. Here we go. Thank you so much.
Just call my name, I'll be there in a hurry. You don't have to I'll be there on the double as fast as I can.
Going to put that out to as a single. I thought it sounded great, but that Michael McDonald, the stinker, he's a good buddy of mine. He put the record out first, so we had a pass on that. But I think the Ray Charles single is going to do good for us. And you guys have been a really gracious crowd. Give yourselves a big hand. You guys have been fantastic. Thank you so much.
I want to toss a question to your keyboard player who also produced the new record, the great Randy Forrester back there on keys, everybody. You know, Randy, what was the approach going in to get this record done, and how do you take all these different tunes, give them their own personality, and yet keep the same spice in the record?
It really wasn't that difficult. I mean, Eddie handpicked these songs in a hurry when we talked about doing it. He knew exactly what he wanted to do. We first laid the tracks really close to the originals. A couple of places we zaned off here and there a little bit, so they weren't just totally a copy of the record, but for the most part, it was like reconstructing the songs the first time around. I mean, we've both been hearing these songs for 35, 40 years now, you know, so.
Was there anything that you guys wanted to do on the record that just did not work?
We had a couple of songs that I can't even remember what they were. I think we're going to actually go back in, because remember the song by Tammy Terrell and Marvin Gaye? It takes two. And I was thinking about doing that with my daughter. So when we open up that can, we're talking about making another record from 60s and 70s. It'll be a continuation of this record, you know, which should be a lot of fun.
You have a question you'd like to ask?
Yeah. You've done a lot with your life, and you've met so many great people. What is one good piece of advice you would give someone trying to make it into the business?
Well, I got to tell you the truth. When you get into the business, you'll find that when you become famous, a lot of good people are hanging out, and then there's a lot of hanger-oners that are just basically bad people, even if they don't know they're bad people, whether they're alcoholics or they got a chemical dependency and stuff like that. And you can have the tendency. I think that the people say to me, how did you have – I had a major drug overdose, which was horrible. I snorted a thing called Phenytoin, which is a bathtub barbiturate, and I was drinking a lot of alcohol that night, and it put me into a semi-catatonic state, and I fell asleep on my leg and killed the sciatic nerve on my left leg. It's the longest nerve in your body, so I couldn't actually walk for a whole year, which was very, very tragic, and I almost died, and I came back and I wrote that record, No Control, about this kid, you know, it could happen to anybody. You know, when you have a lot of money, you tend to overindulge. And people say, how did you OD? I said, hey, man, it was free. So you got to watch your P's and Q's. And I'm glad that my daughter is a lot smarter than me. And I feel blessed that I had the opportunity to be where I am and who I am. Of course, I don't think they're ever going to let me in the Hall of Fame, because I made a lot of enemies coming up. The crowds always love me, but I didn't always get along with the critics, you know. So when they put me in the Hall of Fame, I'll probably be an urn on my wife's fireplace. You know? But make a long story short, I'd love to get there someday.
Did you have any worries bringing your daughter out on the road, even being surrounded by the best intentioned people? The road is the road.
Well, you know, my daughter, she's not the...
She's blushing terribly right now.
She's not a little angel. Let's put it that way. She's not a little angel. I mean, I had her in one of the best high schools in California, but she, you know, she's like me. She wound up running with the wrong people and stuff like that. But no, she's got a life together, and I'm very proud of the fact that she's writing her own material right now. She just finished doing a demo with John Carter Cash. That's the late Johnny Cash and June Carter's son. And eventually we're trying to put it together so we can do a set that she can do her own material before I come out. And she's got really good stage presence, so, you know.
My what about the other kids?
My wife spends a fortune on her wardrobe, which I can't stand, you know.
It's worth it. You know.
What about the other kids? Because I think one plays drums, and there's pictures on the website of them working the merch booth, too. So it's like a family affair going on.
Well, I got to tell you, I called my son up. He started, I'm trying to get him into a better high school, for example. And in the fourth quarter, he had like four B's. So I called him up right now, and we were sending the transcripts over to this high school I'm trying to get him into. And all of a sudden, the four B's have turned into four C's. And I'm going, what the hell happened to all your marks here? I'm trying to get you into a better school. And it's like, he's so cocky. Dad, you got to hear me play guitar. I'm going, oh, my God, what is this? Are you serious? I said, you can't. They figure me. They look at me, they're going, hey, Dad, you know, you made it, and you're really not that good. So the kids, all of a sudden, now my son thinks he's going to be the next Incubus. I don't know, the material he listens to. The guitar playing is okay, but the lead singer's going, I'm going, what the hell are you listening to? Is that guy singing, or is he trying to jump out of a building? But, you know, music changes, you know. You got to keep up with the times. I'm just a grumpy old father like everybody else. Hi, Annie, you got a question for me? Hi.
My question is, as you know, when we're all driving in our cars and on our treadmills and having our dinner music, we're listening to you.
Thank you so much.
So what is it that you are listening to?
I like the Beatles. I like the early Beatles. My favorite record, I guess, is Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Of course, I still love James Brown. I like Otis Redding. I like Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. I listen to a lot of music from the 60s. You know, I'm stuck on that classic rock station, you know. But, I mean, I think a lot of new groups are really good now, too.
Now, was it one of your gigs or was it one of their gigs? I think you recently did some stuff on stage with the band Hinder.
Hinder, they're from Oklahoma City, and they're just like these huge Eddie Money fans. Why, I don't know. You know you're getting old when you got a group that's like really infatuated with you. I thought that Paul McCartney was standing behind me. These kids are really big Eddie Money fans, and they're doing Take Me Home Tonight in their set. And they did a big show at the Whiskey, and they had me come up, and we did the song on stage. And they put a nice little twist on Take Me Home Tonight. It was really, really different. But you know you're getting old when the drummer of the band's trying to pick up your daughter, and you're trying to stay up to stop it, you know? After 11:30, please, huh? Leave my daughter alone and let me go to bed, for Christ's sake. Party's over. Everybody out.
One thing that has been a hallmark of your career, going back to the very beginning, is your deep involvement in a lot of charity work.
Sure, yeah,
and,
that's very true.
One of the first conversations I ever had with you was about a charity thing you were putting together and getting some involvement in it. Tell me about all the things you're currently involved in.
Well, we do a lot of work for the Elizabeth Glazier Pediatrics AIDS Foundation because people don't realize how devastating this disease is, how it's knocking out whole countries in Africa because these people aren't practicing safe sex. And then you got over here, you got all these people that are using drugs intravenously. And then you got all these kids that are born with this devastating disease. And if you go to these hospitals and you meet the parents and you meet these doctors and the nurses that really care so much for these children, it's just, it really opens up your heart to, like, you know, what a wonderful foundation this is. Now, Elizabeth Glazier was actually the wife of poor Michael Glazier, who was the curly-haired guy in Starsky and Hutch. And she wound up getting AIDS because it was from a bad blood transfusion. In those days, they weren't testing tainted blood for AIDS. So her and a little girl, Ariel, actually died of this devastating disease. And she wrote a very heartwarming book and stuff like that. So we try to get out there and support Elizabeth Glazier at the Pediatrics AIDS Foundation because due to a lot of research and stuff like that, the kids are living longer and longer every year. You know, it's not just Magic Johnson, who I love. I'm a Laker fan. But it's all about the kids, you know, getting these kids healthy and advancements in medicine and further and further and trying to conquer this horrible disease. And we do a lot of work for the American Cancer Foundation. I lost my mother to cancer. We do work with them. The music business, I don't care who you meet, there's always people that are really giving their hearts and their money out to a lot of foundations, you know. They've been ripped off by the record companies for years, so they don't know the difference if they're losing $10,000, $20,000 a year. Just give it to charity.
And what about the Eddie Money Celebrity Golf Shootout?
You know, I love, every time I play my Celebrity Golf Shootout, or every time I go on the road and Eddie Money's here, everybody wants me to be in their golf tournament, but for some reason, nobody wants me on their team. I kind of play golf a little like Stevie Wonder at night. But we do have a nice tournament. We have a lot of celebrities come out and play with us, and it's a lot of fun. We get to raise money for a lot of charitable events, and I think we're having it this year in Malibu in California, which is a really high-class golf course, which is really nice. So the more famous the golf course, the more celebrities you have. The more celebrities you have, the more money you raise for the course.
Now, who's a great golfer? Who's an absolute horrifically bad golfer that you've seen?
Mike Reno's a good golfer. You know, he's a pretty good golfer. And let's see who's a good golfer. Of course, Huey Lewis is a very good golfer. Alice Cooper's a good golfer. None of the guys in my band are good golfers. We're okay, but we'd play a lot better if they let us play on the lady tees, you know, but they don't. I love the game, though. It's a lot of fun. It keeps you out of trouble, you know?
Now, what about video games? The reason I ask is it's a common thing for people who spend a lot of time trapped on a bus to play them. You could have knocked me over.
I'm in Grand Theft Auto, Part 2.
That's what I'm leading to, because there I am playing Grand Theft Auto, and I'm like, I hear Two Tickets to Paradise, and I'm like, I think at that point I was like shooting another pimp or something, and or trying to run somebody over, and one of your tunes comes on.
It's like the biggest, it's one of the biggest video games in America, and of course, yeah. Two Tickets to Paradise is on it. Of course, they think they only use 11 seconds. And you only get paid when they do 12 seconds. So they beat me up on that one. So
are you kidding me?
No. Two tickets to Lawyersville. Let's put it that way. But anyway, they get to hear the song and they get to shoot a bunch of guys. And I haven't ripped a car off in years. Come on.
Well, you know what? We have at least one more song here, although I'd love to get maybe an extra one out of you as well.
Whatever you want to hear.
Well, you know what? Somebody had mentioned Trinidad or water. You had mentioned...
We could do, we should do something for the young lady here, huh?
What do you want to do?
She wants to be a Trinidad, we'll give it Trinidad. Without the saxophone.
Everybody, ride the wind, sail the water.
XM Radio.
For you over there, that wasn't on the set list. That was an extra one.
Those oldies but goodies. All my ladies from the 80s.
Eddie, you've had so many highlights. As you look back on everything, what are the ones that really spring to mind? What are the two or three great moments?
Well, I'll tell you one of the great moments, I guess, is when we played the US Festival with the Police. There was 650,000 people out there. It was, I've never seen so many people in my entire life. And we played in the middle of the afternoon. And it was so hot. It had to be about 95, 96 degrees. And the sun was beating on down on everybody. And we decided to do the song, Give Me Some Water. And Bill Graham, who was the real, you know, he ran the Perfect Puppet Show. You know, pull your string, I got your strings. You know, he said to me, we should do Give Me Some Water and turn the hoses on the fans out there in the middle of the set. I thought, well, you know, that sounds like a wonderful idea. So we did Give Me Some Water, and in the middle of the song, Bill hit these people, all over these people, with really cold, refreshing water. And in the middle of give me some water. It was just really, it was incredible to watch.
Brilliant theater, yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Of course, the story of the lead guitar player from The Cars remembers is we were all in limousines, and I was in the first limousine, and they had, like, Sting behind me and all the people behind me in limousines. Well, I didn't know everybody was behind me. Well, I got out of the limousine because it was a hot dog stand, and I was starving. So I ran to the hot dog stand, and I held the limousines up for 50 minutes going, who's hell up there? Who the hell is in that first limo? It said, where is he? He went out to get a hot dog. I never heard the end of that.
And we've been fortunate enough to have fans here asking you questions today, but to all of those folks who you might never meet one-on-one who have been supporting you all these years, what would you want to tell them?
Well, I got to tell them that I'm very happy with my success. I want to thank everybody. To me, my fans, my wife used to get so mad at me sometimes because to me, I've always put my fans first. I mean, because where would you be without people? I mean, I really have always had time to sign an autograph. It's nothing worse than being in a bar and signing a drink coaster that is wet from the drink being on it with a pen that doesn't work. You're like a brain surgeon trying to write your name perfectly in between the liquid circle and stuff like that. But to me, it's like the fans have always been very, very, very nice to me and gracious. And I met so many fans out there that said they conceived their first child in a car. They made it through a rehab because of me and this and that like that. And it's just great. You know, when you think about it, when I wrote the new set list up, we're out there signing T-shirts for the fans every night, and the fans started telling me, you should do this, you should do that. I said to myself, why don't you guys write the set list? So I turned around, and they decided to write the set list, so they put two tickets first. I said, wait a minute, that's my bread and butter song. That's at the end of the night. I said, no, listen to us. Put two tickets first, and then do Think I'm in Love, and follow up by Wanna Go Back, and then bring Jessica Ralph and Take Me Home Tonight. I'm going, you guys are, that set ain't ever going to work. Everything's ass backwards. They're going, try it our way. So sure enough, I did the set the way the fans wrote the set list up, and since then, I can't go wrong. I should have listened to them 20 years ago, because the set list that the fans wrote up works fantastic. So the fans are usually right, believe it or not, you know.
They're always right.
They're usually all right.
Well, listen, I want to thank you and the band for coming out.
I want to thank such a gracious audience. You guys are really fantastic.
And the new CD, Wanna Go Back, highly recommended. And it's always great to see you. All through the years, you've always been a great guy. And,
thanks so much, Lou.
Just as nice as anybody could ever want to be.
I appreciate
thank you so
that.
Much.
I wish my wife was a fan.
You got one last one in you, I think?
Yeah. We would like to do a song, and I want to dedicate this to all the Eddie Money fans out there that never really forgot me and was always behind me when I wasn't making records, when I was laid up in the hospital and stuff like that. You guys never really, you're always gracious enough to leave me in the back of your mind. And when I came back out, all the fans came back out and saw me again, and I just show my appreciation. I always tell everybody, hey, I want to go back and do it all over again. You know what I'm saying?
Forrester on keyboards, Tommy Gervin guitar, Lee Beverly on bass, Chris Frazier drums, Jesse Money on vocals. Ladies and gentlemen, one more time, Eddie Money.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I love my wife and kids. I wish they could have been here for this fantastic show. Thank you, everybody.
XM's Artist Confidential.
Confidential.
Okay.
This XM exclusive music original presentation was recorded and performed at the XM Performance Theater in Washington, D.C.
With special thanks to Randy Forrester. Session recorded and mixed by Michael Taylor. Assisted by Alex Hodge. Hosted by Lou Brutus. Editing by Trish Willard. Post producer, Aaron Lee. XM operatives on this program include Jamie Karp, Megan Boja, Dan Turner, Lee Abrams, and Hugh Panero. With special thanks to catering by Red Hot and Blue. And we thank Eddie Money for 30 years of working class rock. Artist Confidential is produced exclusively by XM Satellite Radio.